Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 204 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. Maybe you were able to follow GP Copenhagen and GP Kobe. Maybe you were able to play some Magic yourself at FNM or PPTQ, wherever you are. Whatever the weekend entailed, I hope it was a blast and that Magic was definitely involved. For those of you in the States, I hope you had a fantastic Memorial Day yesterday. I ran a half marathon. It was amazing. Every year for the past six, maybe seven now, I've been going down to Southern California to run a half marathon. And it's become a fun little tradition for my family. But as always, we have a fantastic guest lined up for you today. But before we dive into that, I want to say thank you to Paragon City Games, our proud sponsor. Check them out at ParagonCityGames.com, where heroes play. Also, this show is brought to you by the patrons. Thank you so much for your support. We're closing in quickly on a new month, which means I will be doing a patron-exclusive giveaway. So if you want to be entered into that, feel free to pledge at any level at mtgpro2.com/Patreon. Patrons, thank you. I really can't say it enough. I appreciate your support. Well, as I mentioned last weekend, we had GP Copenhagen and GP Kobe. And this weekend, we have GP Amsterdam, GP Manila, and GP Omaha. So, three Grand Prix this weekend. It's going to be awesome. I love this time of year. Just so many Magic tournaments going on. We have the Pro Tour, and then boom, 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 boom. Magic tournaments all around. It's going to be great. We have some phenomenal players to invite onto the show. And I'm confident there's going to be another round of amazing players who make the top eight of the three Grand Prix this weekend that we can reach out to and bring on the show as well. You know, I love hearing back from you. I love to hear your feedback on the show. I mean, I have a blast bringing on these guests and talking about their journey in Magic and diving into what I think we could do to be better players. But let me know what you think. You can hit me up in the Facebook group, on Twitter, send me an email. Doesn't matter how you get a hold of me. Let me know what you think about the show. Do you like the guests? Are there questions that you wish I would cover? I'm always, always, always open for feedback. So let me know what you think of the show. I love making this content relevant for you. Is it useful? That's the goal. Because if you find it useful and you're able to climb on up the ranks, then you can contribute to the 1,000 players that MTG Pro Tutor is going to send to the Pro Tour. That's right. The goal is to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour. So keep me in the loop as to your happenings and also what you find useful about the show. Well, that's enough for me rambling on solo. Let's bring in our experienced guest to sit down and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is an Italian Magic player living in England, a member of Team Axion Now. He's at his best with 40-card decks, but also enjoys the standard format. His achievements include two limited Grand Prix Top 8s and Top 8 at the 2014 World Magic Cup. Coming to us from Oxford, UK, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Francesco Giorgio. Francesco, how are you doing today?
Hello, everyone. Hello, Sean. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're so happy you're here. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yes, sure.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Francesco, the best place to do that is online. He is on Twitter, not as in he has a profile on Twitter. He's not there very often, but if you want to find him on Twitter, he's at S-N-I-E-S-K. So at Snisk. It's just some random group of letters. He's always used it, so no real significance there. But yeah, you can find him on Twitter, and you can connect with him, when he's on. So, Francesco, we love learning about what our guests have going on outside of Magic before we do the Magic stuff. So, you're Italian, you're living in England. Why is that? What brings you to England?
Right, so I am an electronic engineer, and I moved to England to do a PhD at the University of Oxford. And I'm kind of still doing that, although I've recently started a new job as well.
Okay.
I work in a company associated with Toshiba, and we make hard drives, basically.
Nice. So you basically make hard drives, so that's really cool. And what exactly do you do in that process? Are you like quality, or are you actually working on stuff? Or
I'm a design engineer, so I design the chips.
Nice. Oh, that's pretty cool. And how long have you been in England?
About 3 years. And a half.
Nice. Very nice. That's awesome.
In a nice experience, yes.
Oh, man, that's great. So, yeah, and you're still doing school, you said? Still working on your PhD?
Yes, basically I'm working, but on the sides I'm finishing my PhD.
Busy life, and somehow you squeeze in Magic. We are so happy that you do, because we just love talking to players of all skill levels from all over the world and just kind of see what they have going on. And so on that note, we would love to get your origin story. We want to go back in time, take us to the day, tell us the story of the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Right. Let's see. I mean, this This was actually long ago. I think I was about 15, but like a group of friends started buying some starter pack of some 7th or 8th edition. I don't know. And we played for a bit, but didn't really keep it up. But then I rediscovered the game much, much later, again, because some other friends were playing. And I got really hooked into it. This was about 5 years ago.
Okay.
I basically started with Innistrad.
Excellent. So your first set, though, was 7th edition, you said?
Yes, but I was just really playing. I played for like a month or so, just with the starter pack, basically.
Yeah, got it. So then you really came in hard, you said, about 5 years ago around Innistrad?
Yeah. I've always known the game during this time, but never really played it. Then some friends introduced me to it again, and it's pretty fun.
There you go.
Let's try.
So do you have a favorite set?
Probably Kanz.
Nice.
That great limited and also great impact for Constructed. Just not awesome cards.
Yeah. And then along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
So when I started, the first deck I played competitively, it was Burning Pot in Standard.
Nice.
Which like I kind of made the list myself at the beginning and was going very well, and the card was just amazing to play. So yes, I would say Birthing Pod.
Cool. Now, for those of us who don't know, what is Birthing Pod? What does it do, and why do you like it?
So Birthing Pod is a 4-mana artifact, costs 3 and a Phyrexian green, and with 1 and a Phyrexian green, lets you sacrifice a creature and get from your deck a creature that costs up to 1 more. No, exactly 1 more, I think. Oh, I don't remember anymore. but anyway, basically, it's like, you can turn your you can make your deck so that it is a toolbox and you always get something you need. You can adapt to any situation. And basically, each turn, there's like a million choices you can make. That's why I liked it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. Like you said, 1 and a green or, you know, Phyrexian and tap it. And then it is 1 plus the sacrifice creature's converted mana cost. So you just kind of get to, like you said, a toolbox. You get to go search for what you need and you can do it at instant speed. And just an amazing card. Like, really good stuff.
It's only sorcery, actually, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's great. So as you started getting better at Magic, you know, so I guess after your serious introduction, what was an early challenge that you struggled with but that you eventually overcame?
Right. So, as I said, like at the beginning, I didn't like to play, the best decks. At the beginning, I believed that you could kind of brew and make your own. And that's what I did at the beginning with Birthing Pod. But then, I don't think there is much space for brewing it depends on what level you play. Like, obviously, you're going to play the Pro Tour, like you kind of need to explore different possibilities. But for most things, you should just play the best decks that are around, better game decks, so to say. And at the beginning, I didn't, and I wasn't winning very much. So I learned that this had to change, and then start going better. That good thing constructed anyway, but...
Now, on that note, because we have heard there is a nice balance between seeing what's working, you know, grabbing the best decks, and then also kind of innovating on your own. Where is that balance for you? You know, like, because you don't want to disregard all the work that other people have done, but if you're always taking what you see online, I feel you're going to be like 1 or 2 weeks behind. So what's that balance like for you between, net decking and innovation?
Yeah, obviously, I think you have to start from the decks that you can see. But personally, like, I always like to make some changes. So I actually think I'm pretty good at fine tuning the decks for the specific tournaments. Not very good at starting from the beginning. So I think a good place to be is following what's going around, the decks that are played, and kind of tweak based on what you expect to see at the next tournament, basically.
Love it. Absolutely. That is good stuff. And as you have improved as a player, who have been your Magic mentors? Do you have any players that you look up to that has kind of helped you along the way?
Well, I guess so. When I started, as I said, I was playing initially with friends, and then I started going to my first few tournaments, but these were like FNM, things like this,
right?
And then I met a lot of people who have been very helpful. These aren't like very famous players,
yeah, that's fine,
or anything, but they've really taught me well, actually. I think most of them from my hometown, they would have what it takes actually to get to the Pro Tour and beyond. Some have actually. Then I took the game, like so to say, to the next level. I took the game more seriously, so I kind of managed to go like at Pro Tour level or top 80 GPs. But they've been really, they've been very good and instrumental to my growth, so to say.
That's awesome, yeah. And like you said, oftentimes the people who help us along the way the most, you know, aren't the big names or whatever. Well, we can learn from them, obviously, because we're reading their articles and watching them, stuff like that. It's the people that we get to play with, you know, in the local level that might not have like this big name that really help us along. And then, like you said, you among that group kind of takes one step further in top eight of Pro Tour, and that'd be nice, right? Top eight of Grand Prix and go to the Pro Tour. And yeah, but it all starts with that local nexus, you know, that core group of friends. And that's awesome. It's really cool to recognize that, you know, we don't do magic alone. You know, we need opponents to play against, but then we also have friends that we can talk to, and magic is not a lone sport. It's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
It's a great way to make friends.
It is. It absolutely is. Like for me, like whenever I move to a new area, like I love that I can find a game store and start going, and you know, within a couple of weeks or months, like, you know, those are the people that I'm inviting over for birthday parties and stuff like that. You know, it's really cool. It's really cool that you can make friends. So on your journey, you've had ups, you've had downs. You know, we all have as Magic players. And we would love to know, what has been your worst Magic moment? And then specifically, what did you learn from that experience?
Right. I guess, so when I topped the GP Madrid, I lost the final to a terrible mistake, which I didn't even notice. During all the match, and then Alexa Telerov, which was my opponent, kind of say, "Look, man, it's not my fault that I won." And then was explained to me my mistakes, and that was brutal. But the mistake actually involved not reading a card. So I guess the first thing I've learned is that at any level, always read the cards.
Hmm. What happened? Can you walk us through the details?
So I was playing, so this was Magic Origins Limited, and I was playing Kithion Irregulus, which was a 4-3 with Renown 1, and had an ability, white, top target creature. So he plays Claustrophobia on it, and so it gets tapped. And Claustrophobia says, when it enters the battlefield, tap enchanted creature, and enchanted creature doesn't untap, and that's it. But basically, I didn't activate his ability for the rest of the game, which made me lose. There is a card, which is Encrust, I think, which is similar, but also stops activated ability, so got confused.
Got it.
From it. And so that was brutal.
But
we have to deal with it. We just move on to the next tournament.
That's so interesting. Like you said, like, you know, the big takeaway is read the cards. And I've been there too, where, I remember, again, same thing, you know, just not reading the cards and not understanding the board state. And then I was like, you know what? Like, it doesn't matter. So it was like the next couple of games, I said, I'm going to read every single card, even if I know what it does. And so then my opponent plays like a Monastery Swift Spear, and I pick it up and I read it just so I can get in the practice of reading. I knew what it did, right? It has haste, it has prowess, but I wanted to make sure that I got in the habit of reading the cards to try and overcome my big mistake from last time of doing something very similar where I just didn't read the cards and didn't understand what was going on. So yeah, good point. Very good point. And like how you said, it doesn't matter any level. It doesn't matter what level of Magic you are, you know, reading the cards and become familiar is a good thing to do.
But then again, in that top eight, basically I was playing pretty badly overall, like besides this. And basically, as soon as it finished, I realized how tired I was. But, you know, in the moment, you kind of don't realize. So another takeaway from that was that you really need to get every moment possible in a long tournament to rest. And this is very important.
Now, when you say that, I think, okay, obviously the night before, you have to get a good amount of sleep. You can't stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out that last cyborg card or whatever. But do you have any tips for during the day? Because those days are long. You know, you're playing long days of Magic, whatever. Is there anything that you can do during the day to conserve energy, to kind of stay on point? What are your thoughts on that?
See, first thing, think about lunch, which is always an issue at GPs.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, before you go to the tournament, buy anything you would need, like water, Coke or whatever, something to eat, some snacks to go through the day. This helps. But this will depend on what deck you play, like if it's fast or not. But if you have a chance to have a break, just have a break. And also something actually I like to do between rounds is playing, although like very relaxed, in a very relaxed way, but this is just for me, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, find someone up, play some games.
Yeah. You know, and everyone's different. I love that. I love hearing what people do in between games. Some people, they don't want to think about Magic. They call somebody who's not there and they talk about non-Magic stuff, you know. Some people like you, like they play like real casual games just kind of for fun. Some people walk around, you know, get a breather. Like, I love hearing, listen to music. A lot of people, you know, some people listen to music. So I love hearing what people do in between rounds. And that's awesome because Prodigies, find what works for you. You know, go to events and try different things. You know, figure out what keeps you, you know, focused, what keeps you recharged and ready to go for the next one. And there's no right way to do, you know, there's no right way to behave in between rounds. Just, you know, find what works for you. So that's awesome. Now, on the flip side, Francesco, are our highs and our proud Magic moments. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
I guess when I won my first PTQ, or no, mostly actually the World Magic Cup.
Yeah.
Because that was just super fun tournament. team events are just the best. Like whenever there's a team sealed, now there's they started doing this team mode and I was going to play them. And this was one of like the tournaments I liked the most. So yeah, it must have been the World Magic Cup of 2014.
Awesome. What was that event like?
Well, first the atmosphere is great. It's a bit different from the Pro Tour because they really emphasize this the fact that it's country's team, mm-hmm. and it's all the where a lot of teams like dressed with their country colors or like dresses. It was really fun. And then there's the team aspects, which is just great because you don't always you test for tournaments and you test with your team, but eventually all the people you interact with are just your opponents. But having like someone with whom you actually share the win directly, and you work together to win the match, it's just great. It's just another kind of thing compared to individual ones.
Man, that's awesome. That's a lot of fun, and we've heard from other you know, World Magic Cup competitors and saying how much fun and how much they loved, you know, the World Magic Cup for that exact same reason, the team aspect and just how cool it is to be there representing your country with other players and just that's awesome. And you guys made it all the way to top 8 in 2014, is that right?
Yeah, we lost against Denmark in semifinal. We ended up winning. We actually played against Denmark 3 times.
No way. Oh my gosh.
We knew them well at that point.
We knew them well. Oh, that's so fun. That is so fun. Now, here you are. You just recently made top 8 of another Grand Prix. Is that right?
Yes, just GP Bologna. Nice. Again, limited.
Yeah, very nice. And so that has you queued up for Kyoto. Is that right?
Yes.
Cool.
I really wanted to go to that one.
Oh, you wanted to go to Dublin?
No, to Kyoto, yeah.
Oh, you really wanted to go to that one. Got it. Sorry. Got it. Cool. Yeah, and so here you are. We would love to dive into how you prepare for an event. So you just made top 8 of Bologna, which was sealed, right? So what did you do? Like, how do you – let's talk about getting ready for a limited Grand Prix because, yeah, we are really interested in learning how to get sharp.
So, well, mostly it's practice and discussions as well. So I'm a member of a team, Team Axiom now, and people in these teams are great. And we often have lot of discussions on cards, the set, the format. And so from one side, there is kind of individual practice on Magic Online, but also, local events and with local players. But then there's also an aspect where you kind of have to confront your opinion with other people's, and then the team has helped me a lot. We basically discuss how each one of us value the different cards, different strategies, archetypes, and you always find out new things which you have noticed. And so, yeah, I mean, playing, I think it's basically not enough to have that. You need to confront with other people to have that extra edge, I think.
Yeah. So practice and discussion. So on the practice side, how much did you play like before the Grand Prix? How many sealed pulls or drafts were you able to do?
I guess not that much. I did about, 10 sealed.
Okay. So 10 samples.
And one or two drafts.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
And actually on the discussion side,
yes.
Basically on the Saturday when become apprehended, I was doing pretty well. I started going around chasing all my friends. It's like, how do I draft?
Oh, that's funny. So on the discussion side, what do you guys talk about? So you mentioned some of the big stuff like archetypes and whatever, but like, so when it really comes down to it, what are you guys looking at? What are you talking about? What were some of the really good conversations that you had for Omniket Sealed?
Well, we have kind of a structured approach. So before the before a pre-release and also afterwards, we rate all the cards internally.
Okay.
So each one like does his rating of the cards and then we discuss them. So there's someone who basically makes all the statistics based on our marks, and so we see what's the biggest variance. So who is evaluating a particular card very low, and why is there someone else evaluating very high?
Huh.
So then you kind of start seeing all the different how many different people can have different views on the card, and this actually basically reveals that this card can be used in some other way. Because it's also a matter of playstyles. That's why then it's useful to discuss with other people, because everyone kind of plays differently. So someone who values a card high, it's just because in his experiences that's been better because it agrees better with his playstyle. So it's kind of there isn't a... So actually recently, you know, that there are many, many websites that basically publish rating of the cards. I don't really believe this is too useful, because you should always play it for yourself and see how it works for the way you play the game.
Yeah.
Because everyone plays it differently.
Yeah. I love that process that you just said. So each team member ranks the cards by themselves, and then you guys come together and talk about your rankings, and especially look at the huge disparities, why somebody thought one card was really low and someone else thought it was really high. And then those are the discussions you guys start having. And then you also make sure that you take into account that there's, you know, that the play style also, there's biases. Every player has their own biases that they bring. You know, if I'm an aggro player, then I might rank expensive cards lower, for example. But you guys have this discussion and as a team, but everyone went through the work themselves. No one's just showing up saying, teach me. You know, everybody just kind of, they did their own work so they can be, they can contribute. They can have valuable input to the conversation. I love that. I think that's really cool. And I love that you guys have, you know, that structure. And so then everybody has a better understanding. And then in addition, like you said, once it comes out, you're going to pre-releases, you're pulling off, you know, as many seal as you can. You're able to get 10 in before the event. Because usually the seal events, the seal Grand Prix are like, what, 2 weeks after release? So they come pretty quick.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And actually playing at local tournaments, even pre-release, I always go around and ask people their thoughts on the cards.
Uh-huh.
Just because someone is more of a casual player or just play kind of different levels, it doesn't mean that he can't give a good input.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll be like, oh, I was so behind and then I played this card and, you know, I was able to win. It's like, they might be super casual. Yeah. Yeah. They're super casual, but they're having fun and they realize I was about to die and this card saved the game, you know?
Yeah. This is important.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the end, there is not much time, as you say, between the set release and the actual Grand Prix, the way they're putting them now. So you have to get all the occasions to learn new things.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Awesome. So then you show up, you do super awesome at the Grand Prix, making it all the way up to the top eight. So congrats. It's way cool. Now you're queued up for the Pro Tour. How are you going to prepare for the Pro Tour? What does that look like? Do you have teammates that are going? Like, tell us about preparing for a Pro Tour.
So it will largely depend on, as you say, how many teammates qualify. There's already one. So mostly we will be like test together with whoever qualifies from the team. Plus, we usually try to get together with someone else just to get a nice round number. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, a good number is around eight, so you can draft mm-hmm. as well. Actually, I've tested in larger groups. That's actually not so efficient. I think around eight is the right number. So awesome. Just try to fit in other people to reach that.
Perfect. Cool. So you try and get up to eight. And then what do you guys do? Like, is it all online? Are you one of those groups that get together in person beforehand? So what do you guys actually do when you're preparing?
So in general, for the team preparation, we do most of the things online. I mean, not for the Pro Tour specifically, because we basically live in all different parts of England.
Got it.
For the Pro Tour, yes, we basically meet up at some place in the country where the Pro Tour is, usually. We just play. It's there, it's a bit less structured, because there's kind of a impending deadline.
Yes.
Which puts everyone on edge.
Yes.
But usually we try to have like a couple of drafts a day and to have long discussions about the drafts, how they went, and such. One method we use, probably most of the teams do, which is after the drafts, we lay out all the cards in seat order, all the decks, and see how the decks came to be, who picked what, what was the reason for the picks. And kind of get a feel of what are the good cards, what is the pick order. But then again, this depends on your own playstyle as well. And for constructed, well, as I say, you start from deck lists that are, let's say, supposed to be in the metagame and kind of see what's going to be this. Is there a way to use some spice in your cards and see where you go from there? That part I find a bit difficult though.
Man, that's fascinating. I love kind of getting the behind the scenes look, and like I love how you said, you know, there's that impending deadline that kind of puts everybody on edge. I think that's pretty funny. That is so cool. As you've played, you know, Magic, and you've been involved in different groups and teams, and you've played at different levels, what have you, from your observations, what's been the biggest mistake that you see players make, and then how can we avoid that mistake?
So in games, I would say no one blocks enough. I've always said this to so many people. This is for limited, obviously. Like say, I don't know, I attack with a 2-2 into a 1-3. Some people will just not block. Like, oh, what if he has a trick? What if my creatures die? And even, this is pretty, maybe an obvious block, but even in more obvious situation where, you know, I have a 2-4 and you attack with a 2-2 into my 2-4. Yeah, why not block? Yeah, obviously they have a trick, but they just have to use it. And in a limited deck, you have about 15 creatures. But you only have seven, eight spells.
Okay.
So the spells are much more useful than the creatures. Losing a creature to a trick, you basically traded something that you have 15 alternatives with something that was probably unique in their deck.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. So you should just always block, even when they're, you know, have an obvious trick.
I tend to block more often than not.
Okay. All right. That's a very good observation. You know, players don't block enough. So, you know, baiting out the combat trick, if you can afford it. I mean, if you get their creature and the combat trick, that's a 2-for-1, right? And, and then, like you said, you should have 15 more creatures in there. So, that's a very good perspective, you know. So, you know, practice blocking a little bit more and see where that takes you. That's cool. That's really cool. Now, what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Let's see. I guess it's about analyzing my own mistakes. This is very important in Magic. It's very important in your life. And this is also another advice I would give to everyone. Just look back to every match you play, the one you lose, but also the one you win, because you always make mistakes. Even like, oh, I've crushed my opponents. But if you go back and look at each and every step, you're going to see where you could have improved. And so, yes, I guess Magic helped me in this way to analyze what things I do wrong, how can I improve every time.
Yeah, that's so awesome. You know, looking back, like you said, win or lose, so regardless of the outcome, looking back and seeing what you could have done better and how you can do that in life as well, whether that's at your job or in a relationship or just, you know, whatever. I don't know. You can get down to putting away the dishes. How could I have done that better? I don't know. But like just being able to look back and say, how could I have done that better, regardless of the results, whether they're positive or negative. And that's so cool. And again, I love these direct correlations that we get from Magic straight to life. That is so cool. So what have you learned about yourself? What's the biggest growth you've seen from playing Magic?
I have discovered that I really like traveling, I guess. I didn't do much travel before I started playing GPs. And now I'm basically on a plane about at least once a month. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that was it.
Where has been your favorite place to travel?
Oh, Hawaii.
Hawaii, yeah?
I've been to Honolulu twice with the Proton.
And what do you like about Hawaii?
It's just one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Yeah.
You can find really anything. So in terms of entertainment, whatever kind of person you are, you're going to find something that you like. You like, I don't know, nightlife or like these kind of things. You stay in Honolulu, or if you like going around wildlife and like seeing landscapes, mm-hmm. seas, you can have that in the other islands as well. Or it's just great.
Nice. Are you an adventurous eater when you go out to different countries, or are you pretty lucky?
Yes. I mean, I always take the chance to go around whenever I go to OGP.
Yeah.
And to try local food, which is the most important thing. Always investigate beforehand on restaurants yes. when going to.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on American Italian food? You can be honest. It's fine.
So let's talk about pizza, for example, because I'm from Naples. And okay. basically, pizza is basically from there.
Okay.
But I still enjoy kind of the American style of pizza. It's, for me, it's basically a different dish. Mm. If you compare it to the pizza we have in Naples, it's completely different. But that's not to mean that one is necessarily worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the States a few times and I have enjoyed pizzas there as well.
Well, good for you. Keeping, like you said, just kind of realizing, all right, it's just a different dish pretty much because it has its own influence from wherever it is in the world. So, but now you've inspired me to go to Naples and have some pizza there and see what it's like. So that'll be fun.
It's going to be amazing.
Oh, good. So kind of reining it back in, I guess, what are some of the shortcomings that you see in yourself as a Magic player? What are you working on as a Magic player?
Oh, let's see. Well, definitely unconstructed.
Okay.
I should just try and focus more in my tournament preparation. I always kind of procrastinate. Maybe let's do a draft instead of playing this because I just enjoy it more. But if you want to, like now, I basically tend to play every European GP, and there's I still actually enjoy standard, but for example, modern for me is the worst. And every time I have to play it. So now it's upcoming GP Copenhagen. I kind of have to test it. Basically, I have to do GP Copenhagen and GP Amsterdam the week after. GP Copenhagen is modern and GP Amsterdam is standard. Mm-hmm. So I kind of only want to test standard, really. Huh. But I know I have to do that. So yes, so one of my shortcomings is that I'm too influenced to what I like about formats and about Magic. But, you know, to progress as a player, you should be pretty much used to play everything.
Yeah, a little more well-rounded. Interesting. Yeah. And I love that you identified, you know, so you know what your shortcomings are and identify ways that you could work on it. You know, you say, hey, you know, I know that I procrastinate, so I need to start practicing a little bit earlier and just kind of get in there and get my hands dirty, right? Like, drafting's more fun, but, you know, I have this constructed GP coming up, so I just got to do the work. And so, I love that. I love identifying, again, like you just said, kind of analyzing your shortcomings, right, your mistakes. So identify where you can improve and then what you need to do to improve. So that's awesome. Absolutely awesome. So let's see, what tips and advice? We talked about your, you know, sealed, your tournament preparation. And we've mentioned that your best formats are those 40 card formats or whatever. What would you say to a brand new drafter? Let's say someone who's new to Magic, they don't have a lot of drafts under the belt. What's one thing a new player can focus on to become a better drafter?
I would tell you that, in the end, Magic is simple in what you're supposed to do. You play creatures, you attack with them. You play some tricks to go over the other creatures. So don't try to do too many fancy things.
Hmm.
So just have a solid creature base, some removal, some tricks, and that's fine most of the times. Like some formats are more synergic than others, and you're supposed to do more, well, strange stuff, but usually this is just enough. You shouldn't try to go all in on some weird card that maybe you open as rare. It's just creatures, tricks and removal.
Yeah.
Always works.
Okay, cool. Now, is this advice any different than what you would say to a more experienced drafter? Because, you know, most of the listeners here, the prodigies, they, you know, they love Magic. They go to Friday Night Magic. They go to Grand Prix. Don't always make day two, but that's kind of where we're at. You know, a lot of the players go regularly. They kind of know what's up, but they just haven't kind of broken through. Is that the same advice you would give to them? Or is there something different that when you're more experienced, you can kind of, you know, shift your focus to?
Yes. In a draft, I mean, if you're more experienced and you know the set more, you should always try to I would say, navigate the draft. And with this, I mean, see what other, understand what other people, not see, you can't do that, but understand what your neighbors are doing. And your neighbors are also going to like slightly switch their direction. And you also need to try to kind of follow them and see where your spot is within the draft. That is very important. If you don't get the cards, your deck is not going to be good.
Yeah, that's always been my challenge. It's kind of, like you said, see where my spot is in the draft. Like, what seat am I sitting in? And I'm still trying to figure that one out. And for me, it's tough. Then again, I don't draft as much as I probably should. So actually, on that note, do you do anything on a regular basis? Do you have any like daily habits that you do that help you get better at Magic, or something at least regular that you do?
Well, not daily, but I basically like to draft every week at least. Yeah. I mean, local drafts kind of keeps your it keeps you focused in the game. Sometimes because of work or other stuff, I do periods where I just don't play at all, and then I start practicing for a tournament, and then I'm just very rusty, so to say. Uh-huh. So playing at even like local level, FNM, I always try to go when I can. I always have fun, and it's just even that is just good practice.
Love it. And where do you go for tips and advice? What resources do you turn to?
Well, mostly my team. They are more informed than me, more often than not. But I guess in terms of like websites, I guess I visit MTG Goldfish. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they post some statistics and you can see the recent lists. I tend not to read too many articles. Just one that really interests me, which actually are the ones that are not related like strictly to the, I don't know, like a format or a deck. Like sometimes people just go and write about their tournament experience or like, you know, their life and Magic. So this kind of article I enjoy, the technical articles, not so much.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. And we mentioned, you mentioned, what was it, GP Copenhagen and Amsterdam, and then Pro Tour in Kyoto, Japan. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to be? We love seeing past guests go on and do great things. So what events do you have going on, coming up?
Oh, let's see. Well, basically all the European GPs.
Okay.
Well, I hope I'll be able to go to all of those, but should be. And also, hopefully, next Pro Tours. So I only need 3 more points to make silver, which will give me access to an additional Pro Tour.
Nice.
Albuquerque, I guess. Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. So is that, I mean, you get 3 points for showing up to Kyoto. Are you factoring in that?
Counting
that one. So you just need to pick up, you know, a decent finish at some Grand Prix. I mean, you don't even need to make top 8, right? Can you get 3 points off of?
No, yeah, basically the X4 and X5.
Okay.
X5.
Okay. Not bad. So almost got silver this year. That's great.
Yeah, So I've been silver for 2 years now,
okay.
And I would find it very hard to keep up with the game if I had to play PBTQs.
Yeah, good point. Man, absolutely love it. Prodigies out there, quick reminder, if you want to connect with Francesco, you can do so online. You can find him on Twitter. He's not super active, but you can still find him there. At SNIESK, Snisk. So that's how you can connect with him. He's also on Facebook. So reach out to him, say hello, ask him any follow-on questions, if any. And Francesco, we would love to ask for one last parting piece of guidance, either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
I would like to emphasize the part where you have to look back at every game. Look like everything you've done in a tournament. There's plenty of time to reflect it afterwards, and you should. You'll always find things you can improve on. This is true in Magic and in life, as I was saying before. Even now, like GP Bologna, I didn't lose that many games, but there's still a lot of things which I think I did wrong. Which I really improve on, certainly.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Francesco, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And I want to thank you for your time and for sharing your experiences with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
It's been very fun for me as well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Francesco Giorgio. That was awesome. I just love saying your name. Even though I don't say it with the right finesse that an Italian name deserves, it's still really fun to say. So Francesco, thank you so much for being on the show. Prodigies, you know you can find these show notes at mtgprotutor.com/FrancescoGiorgio. Just look them up there. And as we close out, a huge thank you to Paragon City Games, the sponsor of the show, and the patrons. Thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting the show. ParagonCityGames.com is where you can go to check out how they build the community and where you can get a better understanding of what it means to be a hero. And mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about supporting the show directly if you so choose. There's lots of ways to give back to the show. iTunes rating and reviews, sharing it with a friend is one of the most amazing ways I can think of. All of the above are good choices, and all of the above I am eternally grateful for. Thank you so much for making this thing happen. I love doing this for you. I can't wait to connect with you again real soon. And until then, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.